North Americans are way behind Europeans on the climate change issue. Thanks to a propaganda campaign by big oil and a complacent media, we have Mitchell Anderson on the line, the author of a stinging article on the so-called debate about climate change in Canadian newspapers. And Mitchell, even as we speak, Democrats in both the House and the Senate are investigating how the Bush administration censored scientists on climate change, and the Union of Concerned Scientists have said almost 300 American scientists complained about it. I thought we were greener and brighter here in Canada, but you say the Canadian media isn't doing much better. What is going on with climate reporting in Canada?
Well, I've been a freelance writer for some time, and I've been frustrated in general with the way the mainstream media covers the extremely important issue of climate change and global warming. And one of the things that I find very frustrating is that people that are no longer practicing scientists are cited as scientists in the popular media and are saying things that are really very far removed from what mainstream science is talking about. And, you know, I was drawing the parallel in that article to basically the same thing that the large tobacco companies did many years ago when they were sort of trying to cloud public opinion and understanding of the link between tobacco and cancer. And there was a very interesting report came out by the Union of Concerned Scientists just this month that made a very strong case that big oil companies are basically doing the same thing.
Well, you mentioned big oil. It's hard to miss the giant car ads that keep these newspapers afloat despite their declining readership. In fact, you found Canadian newspapers were paid over $500 million a year by car makers and car dealerships.
Well, actually, they're paid quite a bit more than that by car dealerships and car companies. The statistics I found were through the Canadian Newspaper Association, and they listed the top 30 advertisers in Canadian newspapers, 15 of which were either car companies or car dealerships. And if you add all of those individual advertisers up, just within the top 30, that adds up to over $500 million. Now, ad revenue to Canadian newspapers is over $2 billion a year. So it's unclear exactly how much the car companies are contributing to Canadian newspapers, but even within the top 30, they're over half.
Well, the Globe and Mail reports SUV sales in Canada went up 17% in 2006. Are the glitzy ads working, or are we just that dumb?
Well, I think people need to recognize that, you know, while we think of newspapers as providing a public service, at the end of the day, at the start of the day even, they're a business. You know, they're in the business of making money and selling ad revenue. And, you know, the reason they can sell ad revenue is because people buy them for their content. But, you know, when you're running a business, you have to keep an eye on who your customers are. Your customers are, to a certain extent, the people that are buying your newspaper. But really what you want to do is bump up your advertising so you can bump up your circulation so you can sell advertising space. And that's really what most Canadian publications make their money off. Now, no, I'm not suggesting that, you know, editors are phoning up their car advertisers and saying, geez, do you think I should run this ad? But, you know, it's interesting to note how much ad revenue comes just from the automobile sector.
It's kind of schizophrenic in a way because, you know, newspapers do sell to a certain degree on fear and crisis. So just lately they've got the big headlines about climate change, and yet they've still got the same SUV ads further back in the pages.
Well, I think, you know,
could climate change be actually helping to sell more big cars?
Well, like, climate change makes for a better story when there's another side to it. The problem for a journalist is there really has stopped being another side to climate science about 5 or 10 years ago, at least 5 years ago. And, you know, journalists are trained at a very early age to get both sides of the story. And, you know, as I mentioned, really, in terms of climate science and humans' role in it, there really hasn't been another side of that story in about 5 years. So, you know, on one hand, it must be tempting if you are provided a very well-written article by someone claiming to have credentials in science, saying, well, you know, what you've been told about climate science is all a bunch of bunk, and I'm a climate scientist, and I think, you know, there's another side to this. And, you know, I think, you know, that backed up with, you know, frankly, a very well-financed public relations campaign is really resulted in an unbelievable amount of coverage that's really has very little scientific, if not no scientific basis whatsoever. And that's led to a very dangerous situation in democracies like Canada, where the public is just terribly informed on the science of this. There was a poll came out last year, and it was actually just the fall of last year, showing that 50% of Canadians still believe that the majority of scientists are still arguing about whether climate change is even real. And in the United States, the public is even worse informed. There's, I believe, 63% of Americans still think that, scientists are arguing about whether climate change is even real, let alone the human's role in it. So, you know, where do people get their information? You know, people, most citizens have been long out of school, so they're getting most of their information from the media. And, you know, if you look, you compare scientific opinion on this subject and public opinion on this subject, there is a vast gulf of difference. And I lay the blame for that at the mainstream media.
And you mentioned Canadian newspapers have dumped their environment reporters long ago. Here in British Columbia, I think of people like Terry Glavin and maybe Mark Hume and
Ben Parfitt.
Right. There's a long list, and it all goes back to the time when the lately indicted Conrad Black imposed corporate demands on the newsroom, and it's never really recovered. Why don't we have more professional journalists covering the biggest story of our time?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. You know, I think, you know, journalists like politicians have been kind of caught very flat-footed on this. You know, even a couple of years ago, public concern about the environment was, you know, relatively minor. And for instance, in 1999, only 2% of Canadians saw the leading environmental issue was climate change. In 2004, that was up to 4%. 2005, it was up to 2006, it was up to 20%. And it's really just going ballistic, you know. And you know, so there's increasing scientific studies coming out on this. I really think what's driving it is what people are seeing when they look out their own window. We're seeing more and more examples of extreme weather, and, you know, people believe their own eyes. And, you know, this is really coming home to roost. The great problem with an issue like climate change is the atmosphere of the planet has enormous amount of inertia. And the climate change we've already started, we're not going to see for several years. And it is absolutely critical that we as a society start to deal with this fast, because we're really running out of time. And, you know, don't take my word for it. What I'm doing is telegraphing what I've been told personally by some of the leading scientists that I interviewed for that paper. You know, they told me that they are personally far more scared about this than the general public is. And, you know, I really think that we got to take that to heart, because scientists are not, you know, they're not Pollyannas. They don't, they're not given to hyperbole. But, you know, on this particular issue, you know, when they have, you know, a career of, you know, studying how this planet works and realizing what the planet has been through in geological time, then we're already setting ourselves up for some pretty nasty stuff.
You know, I almost think it compares to the time when the scientists who were working in nuclear physics realized, boy, we could blow up a lot with this stuff if it got into the wrong hands, and had some personal fears that they couldn't really express. And now here with science, we have, again, scientists realizing that humanity may be messing up in a big way, and the word hasn't gotten out until very recently, as you say.
Well, I think one of the challenges of scientists is that, you know, they're not really in the job of communicating to the public. I mean, they've been kind of dragged into it by you know, against their will, and mainly because there's so many people claiming to have scientific credibility. You have absolutely no scientific credibility in the scientific community. Running around creating mischief in the media and misinforming the public. So, you know, a lot of these leading scientists who, frankly, should be, you know, attending to their very important research are instead having to respond in letters to the editor or do media calls, et cetera, et cetera. They're quite personally worried about this, and I think if there's a difference between what's happening with oil companies and what tobacco companies did, I think one difference is just scale. The oil industry is 5 to 6 times bigger than the next largest sector. They're worth somewhere around $8 trillion a year. It's an absolutely enormous corporate sector. The other main difference is that, you know, if people choose to endanger their own health by smoking cigarettes, that's one thing. But, you know, someone living in sub-Saharan Africa is going to get absolutely clobbered by climate change, even though they've made virtually no contribution to this problem whatsoever. And, you know, I consider this, you know, it's not just a shame, it's a moral issue. I find it, frankly, heinous.
Well, it's not just newspapers as well. You know, when I go to Google, it shows me news and sports and entertainment, but there's no environment category, and it's the same all over in 1,000 directories. I want to upload my stories about the planet, but there's no place to put them. I wonder, when will environment issues get their own place?
Well, you know, I'm frustrated, too. Here we've got the, you know, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I'm a huge fan of the CBC. I think they do great work, at least in comparison to a lot of the mainstream media. But, you know, I find it bizarre that the CBC has no dedicated show on the environment, either on the radio or television.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, they have science shows like Quirks and Quarks and The Nature of Things that do fine work, you know, and more covering environmental issues because those are leading scientific issues. But there really is no dedicated show to talk about the environment, to talk about the politics of the environment, spirituality of the environment, the human stories about the environment. I mean, my God, I don't know where you'd start. And I really don't know why they haven't gone there. But I think, you know, considering it's funded by our tax dollars, I'm at a loss as to why they haven't gone down that road, because it would be a terrific program. As far as newspapers go, I don't know what to say. you know, here we are in British Columbia, you know, biggest city in British Columbia, Vancouver. You know, basically, you could say it's the beating heart of the environmental movement in Canada, and, you know, our largest newspaper, you know, is, I would say, has an adversarial attitude towards the environment. They certainly have no environment reporter. You know, the person that's in charge of their opinion page, his last job was with the Fraser Institute. You know,
Yes, you can get a column there if you're the brother of the premier, or it used to be if you were the girlfriend of the owner. you could say whatever you want. But maybe global warming just isn't sexy enough. If we tell people it'll be too hot to have sex when it's 120 degrees out, maybe then they'll feel their sex life is threatened, they'll get more interested.
Well, you know, maybe newspaper editors think that it's all kind of doom and gloom, and it's not gonna move many cars or cans of soup, and that's fair enough. But I think they're doing a disservice to the readers because clearly there's a public interest in this. You know, probably for the first time in Canadian history, environment is well above any other issue in terms of public concern. And, you know, frankly, I think that's going to get more and more stark, as our changing climate is impacting agriculture and fisheries and forestry. It already is impacting forestry. You know, here in the Lower Mainland, we have the city of Richmond, which is on average of 1 meter above sea level, which is the same elevation as the country of Tuvalu, which has already negotiated an agreement to evacuate the majority of its population to New Zealand when it disappears under the waves. And, you know, here we're not even talking about it. You know, we're building a rav line down to Richmond, which is only going to increase densification there. It's crazy. Nobody's talking about this stuff. So, you know, we are in a wealthy nation. We have an opportunity to make some early interventions in this to rejig our society, our economy, to meet these challenges and frankly benefit from them as well. You know, I frankly can't understand how people can, commute 2 or 3 hours a day in single occupancy cars on highways. And, you know, air quality is not even that bad in places like Vancouver. But, my God, you spend a summer in Toronto, absolutely massive externalized costs with regard to things like childhood asthma or emergency room admissions due to the poor air quality. You know, the environment touches on so many different issues. And, you know, I'm fascinated by the topic myself. I think we're very, very grateful to live in such exciting times in a way. But the open question is, what are we going to do about it? And, you know, time will tell. But, you know, as people in a democracy, it's absolutely critical that we be well-informed on these issues. And, you know, on certain particular issues like climate change, we have so far to go to wake people up onto, you know, what the scientific community is trying in their sort of patient, pedantic, and, you know, frankly, poor communication way of telling us. You know, scientists are generally not natural-born communicators, and, you know, that is a void that the media should be filling in, and I would argue they're much more of a problem than a solution.
I really agree with you, but I wanted to ask you too, Mitchell. Do you think it's strange that the public reacts so little when they do find out they've been cheated? You know, Bush lies about Iraq and hundreds of thousands of people die, and he's still president. And I see a parallel in climate change. We know companies like ExxonMobil have been helping people to lie to us about this, and yet we still drive up to their gas pumps as though they didn't do anything wrong. Do you think there's a backlash coming there?
Well, I get kind of heartsick when the public goes ever more cynical about our public and private institutions. Because, you know, what people do then is they sort of tune out and they become non-participants in society. And, you know, I don't think that's a healthy thing. I think we should be extremely grateful to live in a country as fortunate as Canada. And, you know, I think in Canada we arguably have a stronger tradition of putting our politicians on the hot seat than they do in the United States, and I think that's to the public benefit. I think, you know, it's quite amusing to see Prime Minister Harper now rapidly trying to backtrack on all of his dismantling environmental programs for last year, because he has to. Public opinion has shifted on this. And, you know, I really don't think it's going back. There's, I really think gone are the days where political parties can really just ignore the environment. The public is going to demand quite a bit more from them. And it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. You know, Stephen Harper, no matter what you say about him, is not a stupid guy. He's a very shrewd politician. And he is really trying rapidly and frankly in a rather undignified way to recast himself and, you know, renege on a lot of the strong statements that he made earlier about how he feels about climate change, both in terms of policy and science. I mean, you know, that's the beauty of democracy. It's a great spectator sport.
Well, look for Mitchell Anderson's front page story, Trust Us, We're the Media, in the January 25th issue of the Georgia Strait, and check out his other investigative journalism, remember that, at mitchellanderson.blogspot.com. Mitchell, what are you working on these days?
Well, right now I'm starting a co-op of beachcombers. I'm doing a bunch of freelance writing and trying to get outside when it's beautiful as much as I can.
A beachcombers co-op, where can I join that?
Well, you want to talk about that, we can do another interview.
I'll meet you on the beach. Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Pleasure.
All right, bye-bye now.
This is EcoShock Radio. All environment, all the time. Get more info on the web at ecoshock.org.